Good morning. My name is Nick Carson. I'm a child psychiatrist in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and today I'd like to talk to you about online social networks and how they're relevant to the development of identity in the youth that we treat. I have no financial conflicts to disclose, and my two objectives today are to discuss the uses of online social networks with respect to the identity formation of children and adolescents, not adults. So at the end of it, I'd like to have you be able to take away some frameworks for how to think about the way your patients might be using these websites. Now, I'll start with one view at the end of the spectrum. For those of you who don't know Mr. O'Reilly, this guy is a conservative talk show host on an American television network, talking about a 16-year-old who posted a naked picture of herself on a MySpace profile. Mr. O'Reilly says the problem here is that these dopey kids get on there, they give out all kinds of personal information about themselves. This troubled 16-year-old takes a naked picture of herself for no reason, not making any money doing it. It's a cry for help, obviously. So this is one perspective of the use of social networks being for exhibitionism, sexuality, making money, and I would direct you to the poster that Dr. Lipkin showed downstairs regarding sexting. I want to contrast this view of social networks with a quote that a patient of mine gave me. I wish people could just see my MySpace before they met me for real, as if the profile that she had created were the true representation of herself. Now, Dr. Barnett did a great job of defining social networks. The salient points are that they're interconnected and the representative, offering the potential for representations of oneself and communicating those to a number of people. The most popular for youth are MySpace and Facebook. There are 134 the last time I looked at the Wikipedia. But the point is most websites, of course, are social, and this is the whole Web 2.0 phenomenon, which I'll talk about. So some brief stats, you've seen these in a number of presentations. Most youth are using the internet. About half have a social network profile without major ethnic differences, but there are differences in the rates of use between those who live in poverty in the inner cities compared to those who are relatively more affluent in the suburbs. Girls tend to blog more than boys. Almost half post their own artistic work. Crucially, three-quarters post comments on the work of others, and a minority are using email. So much of the communication that's going on is being done on social networks, texting with phones and other media that adults aren't using as much. So there's an interesting study that Hewlett-Packard did regarding the rhythms of use of social networks. Massive data set here of 362 million messages. The point that I think is useful for you is that most messaging takes place between noon and midnight, and most users have about 150 friends. So we see this is noon. We're looking at 1 to 3 messages sent between the hours of 12 and midnight, and then most users kind of cluster around here, which is about 150 friends. So that gives you a sense of how often youth are using these and how many friends they have. Now, identity is a phenomenon that has been identified and described by a number of theorists, but most of the data that I've read in the literature uses Erikson as the main definition. So I'm going to give you some quotes from Dr. Erikson. Identity is a process located in the core of the individual and yet also in the core of his or her communal culture. To discuss the identity problem means to play into cultural history or perhaps become its tool. So I like this definition because identity is seen not as just an intra-individual process, but something that's very contingent on the cultural milieu in which an individual lives. And the cultural milieu for youth is saturated with technology. This picture won't be foreign to many of you, just a summary of the stages through which people are thought to progress. And I think all of these stages, it's been found that people certainly don't progress, they don't master trust and then move on to autonomy without going back and dealing with trust again. These are cyclic, and I think that they can be seen and worked through with the capabilities that social networks provide. Identity, of course, is very important to a number of psychiatric disorders, mood anxiety, developmental disorders, eating disorders, psychosis, personality, and gender identity. All involve very important conceptions of how one views themselves. And I think that the main processes of identity that are relevant to us are involve negotiation of independence, identification of new peer groups, exploring sexuality, and then this this dance between being extremely self-conscious and exhibitionism. Much of the work of identity is thought to be done in this the moratorium, the idea that youth are given a period of time before which they're supposed to commit to adult beliefs and values. So we can think of the concept of a cyber moratorium, where issues of trust can be worked through in the personal disclosures that a youth may or may not make on their social network. Autonomy is explored through the online freedom that youth have in going to any website they want, depending on what type of parental oversight they experience. Industry versus inferiority. This is really important. This speaks to Dr. Barnett's contrast of natives versus immigrants in the digital age. And our main topic of identity, finding a home online, is something that youth are doing more and more. MySpace.com, their motto is a place for friends. So is it just a place for narcissists? There's been some interesting work looking at some important critiques that I think we have to face about the use of social networks by youth. Presenting yourself online gives you the opportunity to present a very controlled self-presentation, which may satisfy a craving for attention. And one wonders, what is the quality of the relationships that are formed and maintained on these websites? Are they shallow or are they deep? Now, there are some arguments against social networks, namely that they prevent a barrier to normal, so-called normal identity development. They prevent real social relationships from maturing. There is the threat of contact by strangers and the neglect of physical activity and family interaction. And in fact, overuse of the internet, television, video games has been correlated with issues of obesity and academic issues. So the question is, should we be actively discouraging social network use? Should we be actively encouraging it? How do we approach this? This is a tag cloud that you may have seen before. The concept of Web 2.0 is best described from a number of words that have been associated with the term. I think the terms trust affiliation, participation, social software, blogs, the long tail, remixability are all very relevant to ideas of identity formation. So why? When one finds new peer groups and has the opportunity to remain anonymous online, there are issues of working through trust, how to affiliate to others. Participation, an aspect of socially active websites, allows a chance to practice new social roles. Blogs involve self-disclosure, self-creation, a narrative of the self. And the long tail is a concept that there are many different unique interests that are represented on the internet, even though they might have a very small audience. So youth that may have particularly unique interests may be able to find a community, be it small or large, online that allows them to feel part of something. And then remixability is this idea related to the reworking of the self. And identity experiments are something that have been studied, and I'm going to review a few pieces of research. So why are youth using social networks? Further, the concept of pimping out your profile has been compared to body language by the anthropologist Dana Boyd, who I highly recommend to you. The idea is they're writing themselves into being. A community is being written into being through the narratives that youth create through the ever-changing profiles that they create on these websites. Identity capital is a very interesting concept. You can think of how youth use social networks as the investments they make in who they are, and there's a relative social standing on these profiles in your network. And the effort in posting pictures and writing about yourself has been described as a way of accumulating identity capital. And this issue of mastering technology, one of the Ericksonian stages, can be a source of pride. So this is a typical example of a publicly available profile, and we see an example of someone trying to be open and trusting, as she writes, if you want to be my friend, I'll be yours. There's a lot of descriptions about what's very important to her as far as her religious beliefs, her music beliefs. And we see there's so much data, so much information available with respect to how she describes herself, the music she's listening to. So these are very, very rich environments for understanding our patients. I'm violating the number one rule of PowerPoint by presenting way too much data here. But this is my space. They're dirty. They're cluttered. There's so much information available there. These questions ask, have you ever cheated on your homework, cheated on a boyfriend, stolen anything, talked about a friend behind their back? Yeah, these are questions that might be a little off-putting. You might not want to answer them if someone asks them to your face, but you can answer them on MySpace. Facebook personality applications, there's thousands of these. Some examples, what does your eye color mean? What color is your soul? What type of a person are you? These are almost like projectives that youth answer, and you can get a nice sense of how they view themselves from the answers that they provide. So identity experimentation is something that does occur fairly frequently among boys more than girls. A quarter of adolescents who are using IM have pretended to be someone else. And what you'll see is often people using different screen names or different emails. And so some authors have felt that the internet can reinforce existing social connections by enabling communication with people you know, or replace absent ones. And I think the point here is there is a subgroup of youth who are very lonely, who don't have a lot of social connections offline, and so they look to the online world to forge new ones. Valkenburg has done some very interesting studies looking at a social network in the Netherlands, and did a study looking at the concepts of social competence and unity of self-concept, which are thought to be very closely related to identity. And some advantages of social networks with respect to these concepts are that they may improve social skills and help consolidate identity. Arguments against this relationship, which have been found in the literature actually until this study, were that use of social networks increased disinhibited behavior, we heard this mentioned yesterday, and increased doubts about self-concept. These are kind of modern and postmodern juxtapositions of identity use. This study was the first to show that there is a correlation between use of social networks, experimenting with one's identity, and then mediated by experiencing a variety of partners, of new friends, having an increase in social competence. So this research was different from research that came behind it because it did a mediated analysis. So I think this is relevant for those who work with youth who have a lot of loneliness, anxiety, depression. Interestingly, they noted that a considerable percentage of adolescents perceived little unity in their self-concept. So a lot of the youth that were studied at baseline felt that they didn't have a good sense of who they were. Another study by the same group looked at self-esteem and well-being, found that on this Dutch social network, teens visited three times a week for 30 minutes. About a third established a friendship, and eight even established a romantic relationship. And the take-home message here is that self-esteem was correlated with feedback. If the feedback was good on what one posted, then self-esteem went up, and vice versa. So the tone of reactions here, if it's positive, then it related to increases in self-esteem and thereby well-being. But if it was negative, then the inverse happened. And finally, I wanted to include this because this study directly addressed the idea of identity and internet dependence. It was a very large study of Taiwanese students who operationalized the concepts of Ericksonian identity and intimacy as crises among youth who chatted or used video games greater than 9 hours per week. They were called internet dependents, and those who used it for less than 9 hours a week were not dependent. And their findings were that those who used more than 9 hours a week showed less successful resolution of these crises of identity and intimacy. Their take-home message was that youth are attracted to the internet to put aside temporarily the painful search for identity. And I mean, you could argue it's the opposite. Youth are going to the internet to work through this painful search for identity. And they concluded by saying, when freshmen enter the door of colleges and universities, it is crucial that they are encouraged or even required to get involved in meaningful and purposeful activities as early as possible. And I don't think they meant going online. So this take-home message is this is kind of interpretation that I don't think really correlates with their data, and I think there's much to be won through working through social networks as a clinician and trying to understand what it is they're getting out of this use. So I'll wrap up by talking about some clinical implications. Dana Boyd writes about the imagined audience. With your patient's permission, see if they let you explore their profile with them. Ask about who they imagine is reading their postings. Try and do a mini ethnography of that world. From the data, we should expect more than one profile and more than one identity to be found online. There might be one that parents are linked to that is relatively clean, and then another that is not. And I've treated youth who are affiliated with gangs in Boston, and that's exactly the case. Consider the answers to the personality surveys that I presented as possible projective tests that can tell you a lot about the unconscious desires of your patients. And then try and understand why are they going online? What are they getting out of it? Conforming, exploring themselves, rebelling. I think you can expect that the distortions and the defense mechanisms that you see every week in your therapy will be reflected in the profiles as well. Some examples you might see are hostility, you might see self-deprecation, misinterpretation of social cues, grandiosity, and of course fantasy. And then you might see that there are some youth who, through using social networks, improve their social skills. And this might be relevant more to youth with pervasive developmental disorders who have great difficulty in offline relationships, but then find that home online. I have a patient who loves a Nintendo game and is actually the coordinator of an online discussion group and very happy doing that. And then understand that responses from others could be helpful or harmful. So you don't want to explore just what your patient is posting on their profile, but also getting a sense of what's the dynamic responses to their postings, because the tone could have an effect on their self-esteem and their well-being. You want to get a sense of how much they're disclosing online. And there's an entire literature about the risks of stranger contact, internet misuse or overuse that is worth reading. And as Dr. Barnett summarized nicely, the ethics of viewing and acting on information online is to be taken very seriously and always with permission from your patient. I'll wrap up with a final quote from Dr. Erickson. Adolescence is least stormy in that segment of youth which is gifted and well-trained in the pursuit of expanding technological trends and thus able to identify with new roles of competency and invention. Thank you very much.